Then we have the best female actors. Let's plow into that.
Okay.
Let's see. The Leftovers. We have Amy Brenneman as Laurie Garvey. Carrie Coon as Nora Durst. Amy Brenneman had... It's amazing that she is relevant to the show in season three. And I thought it was clever how they maintained her role.
With Tommy and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, with Tommy and with... it's not David. Who was the fire chief and Jardin?
John?
John, yeah. Her relationship with John, like the way they kept him around, but yet... She wasn't defined, like, she wasn't just, I mean, they started off running, like, this positive scam on people to help them with their grief.
Right.
And then she ends up having, like, these, like, just this really emotional, like, grace note for her character's exit, which turned out to be a false exit. Like, I mean, she's good. I hated her so much in season one, and I respected and admired her so much in season three, and found, like... Almost that she was more of an audience surrogate than, like, even Kevin, which Kevin was valuable for being the center, which insanity swirls, but also the one that would be like, this is fucking stupid. This makes no sense.
Right.
Just to let you know at the audience that you're not off your rocker thinking that.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like she took a lot over that duty this year, and she did a really great job, but she's not fucking Carrie Coon as Nora Durst.
She's not. What can I say about Carrie Coon that I haven't already said that I didn't say last year when she fucking won this category, right?
Well, she added aggressively non-sexual nudity to the repertoire.
That's true.
Because, like, that... I mean, a lot of times they say, like, nudity is a brave thing to do, which I always kind of, like, I guess, scoff at. But, like, I guess it is a vulnerable thing to do.
Yeah.
To, like, you know, completely have an extended sequence where you're the only thing in the room and you're fucking naked. You're mother naked. There's no place to hide.
No, I'd call it brave. Sure.
Yeah.
I think it's a brave performance.
And it wasn't, like, titillating, and it wasn't sexual. It was just, like, this thing that they were doing, and almost like a reverse Adam and Eve kind of thing. Like you know, instead of being cast out naked from the Garden of Eden, she's being, I don't know, pulled through the other side naked. But it's incredible. It's incredible. And I thought...
Her scenes with Matt, I mean, before she does that... Are truly amazing.
Yeah.
Her fucking, I mean, the final episode of this show is just unspeakably awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes down to the performances of those two main characters, which are Justin Theroux and Carrie Coon, who play so perfectly off of each other.
And there's like three different things you can take away from that final episode and from the series as a whole. All of them contradictory.
Sure.
But you can, like, that's kind of the thesis of the show. Like, whichever of these you choose to believe, you can support and argue about and be moved by and connected by. And that's all on Carrie Coon and Justin Theroux's shoulders to make that work. And these, you know, and also their characters that they've had to pull off. But yeah, I thought it was, you know, her best season yet, honestly. And I was really worried when they teased the old Nora early on in the third season just going to look ridiculous under all that aging makeup. Mm-hmm. But when I actually saw it in motion and everything, it's great. It's great. Like her and, you know, Kevin getting to be kind of like high school sweethearts at the school dance kind of feel, like, was enhanced by the fact that they're old as shit at that point.
Yeah, and I mean the sadness and the joy simultaneously that comes through in those scenes.
Right.
Is I mean those two actors.
And there again, like, you know, as a man who, like, I don't consider that I started living my life until I was about 30 years old.
Okay.
I can really sympathize with the poignancy of, like, shit, I've wasted so much of my life doing something against my best interests.
Mm, yeah.
But yet it's also not too late to stop doing that and find meaning in life. Like, right. I mean, like I said, I'm in the take for this show. The show was made for me, as far as I can tell. And the fact that there's about a million other people that off and on liked it, too, is kind of amazing. But it's clearly the best thing, in my opinion, that was on this television this year, and has the best acting and writing I've ever seen.
Yeah, and I mean, of all the performances, so there are other really solid female performances in the show. Like I said, in the male category, I think The Leftovers gets every scene right. The woman who plays the Outback.
I almost put Regina King on the list just for her 5 minutes.
Right. She just doesn't have a big enough role.
Right.
Even though what she does is amazing.
Yeah.
The woman who plays, I don't know her name, but
she
lost
all of her children in the Outback. Yeah.
Right. She's fantastic and has a great scene with Kevin Garvey Sr.
Mm-hmm.
Where I go, wow, that was an excellent performance. I just don't think anybody has done it as consistently or as impressively as Carrie Coon.
Yep.
Even Amy Brenneman.
Stranger Things 2.
Are we going to bold Carrie?
Oh.
Or does she not need to be bolded?
Yeah. She's bold with a bullet.
She bolds herself.
She's bold. Bold and brave. Brave and bold.
Yeah.
And buck naked. Stranger Things 2, Winona Ryder as Joyce Byers. Not as good as her first season because, you know, she had to take a backseat to her son, essentially.
Yeah.
But still, just an amazing Winona Ryder, or believable Winona Ryder performance. And I love her and David Neighbor's chemistry, or Harbour's chemistry, with Jim Hopper.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I can't say enough about how happy the final 15 minutes of the final episode made me. Because everyone got their moment of, like, that we have put these characters the last 2 years through fucking hell.
Mm-hmm.
And here is just a little bit of a nice scene, a nice, gentle, happy ending for everybody until we start to fucking torture machine up again next year. She's great. But she's not Millie Bobby Brown as Eleven. Because I thought, as much as I thought that she was really good the first year when she played essentially a broken lab rat, the rebellious mutant daughter.
Yeah.
And some of the things that she had to say about, like, her new form of captivity that she had with Sheriff Hopper, I thought it was great. And I'm also one of the weirdos that didn't think Episode 7 was a fucking piece of shit and really liked that arc with her discovering her sister and getting a new bitchin' look and hairdo. So I think, like, she continues to be... I hope this fame doesn't fuck her up because, like, she reminds me a lot of, like, a Natalie Portman from Leon the Professional. Just, like, how the fuck is this 12, 13-year-old doing these things?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what's I hope you navigate this shithole Hollywood minefield with all your humanity intact, Millie. Sadie Sink is Mad Max.
I mean, she's good. I just don't think she's, like, a standout performance.
Yeah.
I
mean, she's essentially plays, like, this, like, tomboy character. Like, I thought she had some really good stuff. It's kind of like, I don't know. She had a lot of good scenes with her brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think in the moments where she wasn't just tasked with being a kid who was having, you know, problems adjusting at school, I think she was more interesting. But, yeah, I mean, it's a good performance, certainly, but I don't think it's as good as Winona Ryder or Millie.
Do you think that we should bold both Winona and Millie, or just keep Millie? Can I see what she did last year? Let me switch over to the Baldies.
Probably just Millie.
I'm interested in seeing... Huh, Millie Bobby Brown barely made the top 10. One, two. Oh, wait, this I don't think is in any particular order.
Mm-mm.
So I'd have to actually, well, what the fuck? I'd have to actually look at the reward show. That's not fun. Yeah, I have no idea what she ended up with last year. I thought she was pretty close to, like, in the top two, if not the top three, if not the top two.
Yeah, she was up there.
To me, I'd take Millie, and that's it. Do you want to make an argument for Winona Ryder?
Nope.
Okay. Then let's slow down to Mr. Robot. So you put Darlene.
I didn't put anybody on this list.
I know for a fact that you didn't put Darlene on there.
No.
Are you sure?
I didn't type any of the
I deliberately made the editorial decision to leave out Darlene. Because I didn't, I didn't, I mean, she's all right. She's all right.
She is. She's not going to win Mr. Robot's chunk of this.
No. I think Grace Gummer is like on a whole other level, especially in the very final episode. And I like Portia Doubleday as Angela Moss. Sue me.
Do you? I thought you turned on
I didn't like, so she had the opposite season of Grace Gummer, where she kind of like faded in. I mean, I know what they're trying to do with her character, and they're trying to express how like fucked up and traumatized she is, but she comes across as just like this lost little girl, which to me is less interesting than the, you know, like cold-blooded assassin that she was kind of starting to become in service of White Rose. That's just me. But to me, I think like Grace Gummer as Dom stole the show.
Yeah, I'm trying to like separate the character from the performance. I think Portia goes a little too hard with Angela. Maybe does a little too much with Angela this season. Because when she does have that turn, she just goes full on crazy. And I think from a character perspective, I'm more okay with that than from the performance perspective, if that makes any sense.
Just like, she becomes like the cat lady version of Hugh. What's the Leonardo DiCaprio aviator? Howard Hughes.
Yeah.
She becomes a crazy cat lady version of Howard Hughes in a single episode.
She does, and I didn't have a problem with that turn for the character, but I think the performance was just a hair too much. Like, it needed to rein that in. So what needed to happen is it needed to even out a little bit more for me. Like, I wanted a little bit more from Angela when she was in her
2.5 hours of The Aviator to get to that point.
Well, she's had 30 hours of Mr. Robot.
Yeah, but she wasn't dashing billionaire playboy Howard Hughes, and then 5 minutes later, crazy cat.
She was psychotically fixated on an ideal that she thought she could hit, and then that was taken away from her. I don't know. I thought the character turn was fine. I think the performance was a little beyond what I wanted to see.
Okay.
Like if she had been a little less monotone, just like robot bullshit in season two, and a little less completely lunatic performance in season three, and those had come closer, I would have said, okay, there's a little more nuance here, a little more subtlety in the performance. But right.
See, I didn't see her as just robotic. So in season two, I thought she was just very driven. Like, she reminded me,
I mean, it was that cold. It was that very, like, detached, doing the stuff she's got to do.
She's
and
very
ignoring.
Kylo Ren, you got to kill the past to see your future kind of thing. I don't know.
Didn't quite work for me as well as Grace Gummer, who I thought did a great job as Dom. And she was also on the quiet side with that performance, but once she gets to the point where she's asked to do something really impressive, I think she does have that subtlety to it.
She
has an anger. She has like a
she literally lights Darlene on fire with her mind.
Yeah, she
with
does.
Her words.
With her words, yeah. and
not
mind.
Literally, she figuratively, but emotionally, just sets her on fire, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and it wasn't beyond that line. Like I felt Portia went. But.
Okay, so are we going to put Grace on the list, on the short list?
Yeah.
Let's move on to Deuce, where Maggie Gyllenhaal is going to definitely
eat the Deuce category for lunch.
This is like a top, probably
and
top
go back
three
for
performance.
Seconds.
Probably a top three performance.
She's fucking incredible, and in every scene, she's really, really good. And then in a couple of scenes, she's some of the best acting I've seen all year.
Dominic Fishback was interesting because I thought she was one of the best things in Show Me a Hero, and she comes back as this Darlene character, like this prostitute that, like, I start to get on her good side, and she's, like, interested in literature, and she's, like, you can tell there's a lot more to her, but then there's a scene where she goes back home and recruits her friends for her pimp, and it's just like, oh, damn it, Dar. You know, it's... I mean, that's why The Deuce is so good. It's always got you reevaluating what you think of people and who are the good guys and who are the bad guys. And the reality is there's no good guys and bad guys. There's just people out there making rational choices for the information they have at the time they've had and the people they are. And it's just, you know, tragic because you're this omniscient narrator and you can see it all. But she's completely fascinating. Mm-hmm. But she's not given the two or three monologues that Maggie Gyllenhaal were given that's just amazing.
Yeah.
So I am going to bold Maggie Gyllenhaal and move my happy ass down to Fargo.
Sounds good.
Fargo, speaking of, Carrie Coon, Gloria Bergel, I thought after she was so amazing in Leftovers that this would be the year of the Coon, because you'd have... you know, she puts in a very small but poignant performance in The Post. She's a powerhouse in Leftovers, and she's on Fargo as the star turn, which is usually like the best role to have. Like in season one, Molly?
Yeah, that's her character name.
Molly,
yeah.
best role to have in second, like
What happened in season two? Simone?
No, I'm talking about for the
Mama Gerhardt,
the sheriff, Luke. No, Patrick.
Yes, Patrick Luke. Something.
Patrick Wilson. Patrick Wilson.
Yeah,
best role to have. So I just thought Carrie Coon is going to be a shoo-in, and instead they had her just really. Like, it was all entirely in service of her character, but she just really drew back and was not Nora Durst. Gloria Bergel,
I mean,
is not Nora Durst.
Pretty close to, like, a Marge Gunderson, right? Like, I mean, this is a very Fargo character.
Imagine Marge.
It's a little bit sadder of a Fargo character.
If her husband had just turned gay and was going to go do duck paintings with his new fabulous gay husband.
And she was now a single mother. Yeah.
There's something broken now. Like, she thought she had this life, and now that's gone. And all she's got left is this detached cop persona, who also is under attack by this fucking asshole in the form of Shea Wiggins, who's the worst cop ever and is trying to destroy her instincts every turn. She's just this. Like, more I think about it, the more you're supposed to see that Gloria sees herself as the robot in the third episode.
Right.
Which, you know, you're like, what the fuck is Aaron talking about? Robots and third episodes? And Fargo season three is a hell of a ride.
Yeah.
Is all I got to say. And you might feel frustrated and tempted to give up during that robot episode, in which I'd say, nope, it's darkest before the dawn.
But all this is to say, this is not the performance that Carrie Coon will be remembered for.
No. It's good.
Certainly in my mind.
It's the type of... It's something she wants in her portfolio because it's excellent work and it's an excellent role. But
I feel like it's serviceable in a way. It's almost utilitarian in a way that Leftovers Carrie Coon is certainly not.
No, that's a showpiece.
Yeah.
Shall we give a little talk to Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Nikki Swango?
Sure.
Very memorable character in her own right.
Yeah, she is. I don't always like her, but I definitely didn't hate her. And I'm talking about the character here. I think Mary's performance was actually really good.
I liked her when she was with... I mean, I liked her when she was with Ewan McGregor's loser brother. I really liked her when she paired up with Mr. Wrench. Mm-hmm. I really liked her when she was in the Jewish purgatory with... The Wandering Jew, played by Ray Wise, I think is the guy's name.
That's his name.
I think she was the most interesting character on the show, and she's very resourceful and amazing, and she's allowed to be like kind of like a badass turn that I did not see coming. Mm-hmm. I really liked it. Like, to me, this was Scott Pilgrim's girlfriend. And now she's Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
And I think there was always this like line that she was kind of straddling between, will she turn out to be a good or a bad person? And
and
playing that, I think, is difficult, because if you go too far in the supportive role for Ray, right, she could become just seen as a good person. If you go too far in the other direction, you're going to think, well, she's trying to fuck Ray over here or something. And she always had us questioning that, and I think that was essential for that character.
Well, because that's essentially the whole season. You're supposed to decide, you know, between Ray and whatever the other brother's name was, which of them is telling the truth, which of them's got the birthright, you know. Like, is Ewan McGregor's character only good in the context of how terrible V.M. Varga's character is?
Uh-huh.
Fargo loves to play those shades of gray, but I don't know if any of them, if any of them should get bolded.
I mean, I
like everything ever happens after Nikki gets the shit beat out of her by Yuri or whatever the wolf's name is amazing. But those first five episodes, she kind of was just this, I don't know what you'd call her, like jailbait for Ewan McGregor's, because I mean, like literally, not because she's underage, but because she's a parolee that he, and that's like, he just felt like she was using him the whole time. And it, you know, I don't know. That's something, I feel like that was still stuff that people debated up until the final episode.
Yeah.
I had decided that she was true blue for him for a long time, but you know, I guess that's how you, what you brought into it. I
might bold her. I'm looking down the list here a little bit. Yeah.
Wouldn't Hoyt.
I think of those two, she's definitely coming out on top in Fargo.
What do we think about Ludivine Sangier, Esther from The Young Pope?
Yeah, this was... man, I don't even know how to describe her character.
It's like a Bathsheba role. Like, sure, most of what she was there to do was to be a temptation for the young Pope.
Yeah.
But that's also, I think, shortchanging her character and how weird things got between her and Jude Law and her Swiss Guard husband.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like it was really weird. Like if what if a Secret Service man's wife fell in love with like John F. Kennedy type U.S. dashing American president.
Mm-hmm.
And like what a weird love triangle that is.
But they also weren't allowed to bang.
And also, there was a miraculous childbirth involved. yeah.
It's a very nuanced, interesting performance, I think. And a lot of that is the material.
Mm-hmm.
But Ludivine is able to pull that off.
I mean, as a consequence of the way this show is structured, there's not a lot of female roles on The Young Pope.
Right.
You know, because last I checked, women can't be cardinals and bishops and popes, and that's 99.9% of what you see on the screen.
And there's John Pope's mom. John Pope, his mom.
Oh!
His not mom. His maybe mom.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
How do we leave off Diane Keaton?
Diane Keaton, yeah.
And also, who is the communications director for the Vatican?
Yeah, she was fun to watch.
She's fun to watch. She's kind of because like a Catherine Zeta-Jones type of role.
Yeah, she was kind of the one who came in to the Vatican and like stirred shit in a weird way, right? Like didn't play by the same rules.
She intrigued the young Pope. Yeah, she intrigued the young Pope.
Because she didn't have the same restrictions as all the religious people in the room.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know if any of them make the bold cut.
I mean, I would say if we're throwing Diane Keaton in there, there's reason to talk about it.
I'm talking about like she's it's a good character, like this weird kind of tomboy nun who had this giant impact on both of these young men's lives, and then how that spun
and who
into.
Has like some ambitions that are sort of in competition with Jude Law, right? Like,
right. But because she doesn't agree with everything that he's doing, but she's still having to carry his water out of some kind of loyalty, but she's also got loyalty to the church. Like, it's a lot of complex stuff there. But I don't know that the performances are as good as... Like, none of these performances move me even as to the Mary Elizabeth Winstead level.
Right.
I didn't think. They were much more, and the problem is, they're much more supporting characters than they are. And maybe we need, like, you know, maybe we need a guest / supporting role category. I'm starting to, like, I'm slowly starting to realize as I do these award shows, like, why they divide things the way they did, you know?
But yeah, I mean, Esther to me is a really interesting, complicated performance, but I'm not sure that, like, I know it's not going to win.
Right.
So, I don't know. Sister basketball.
Yep. I'm fine with not having any of these in. We're going to we're going to have a top 10, won't we? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, I think
so.
I think we will. Okay, because here's a packed cast in The Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, one I haven't seen yet.
Elizabeth Moss as June / Offred again. I've not seen Elizabeth Moss be bad in anything, and she is fucking amazing throughout the entire run of Mad Men. But she has a whole other gear as far as like righteous anger and indignation at. Anyone would feel at the loss of personhood and some of the petty cruelties that that she's forced to endure in the show is just like it's terrible, and she has these natural visceral reactions to them. Yeah, I don't know. It makes you ask questions like, if I was in a situation like this, would I, you know, because like there's so many different women that have different reactions to essentially being slaved and enslaved and treated as breeding stock by these people. Like, do you keep your head down and hope something from the outside saves the day? Do you try to resist in small ways to try to kind of tilt the playing field and position yourself into a place where you might be able to make a difference? Do you just like defiantly like fuck all this shit and get killed, eat a bullet in the first day? Like what do you do? What do you do in this crazy fucking world? And she was amazing, especially towards the tail end of the season. She's amazing. I put Yvonne Strahovski as Serena. She's the wife of the commander, and you find out that they're the architects of kind of like this new weird fundamentalist religious sect that's taken control of America and enslaved all these women. And as a result, she has kind of been like, this is a very intellectually smart, sophisticated woman who's got the same intellectual shackles put upon her by this new system. Because, you know, again, she's this really very smart, engaged, driven woman. And as a result of her ideology winning, she is now a second class citizen. She's like first class among women, but all women are essentially some sort of chattel. So like that sucks for her. But because of her role, like it's just like the Commander Fred or whatever, you can't really feel sorry for her. Like, they can't humanize her or sympathize with her too much because she's a fucking villain. She's like, a lot of this is her fault. Alexis Bledel, do you remember? Alexis Bledel plays Lorelai Gilmore on The Gilmore Girls. She also had a pretty memorable role as a dude that Pete was cheating on the train ride in Mad Men.
Okay. I don't remember.
I'm trying to, because like my point is, I've never seen her where I've been like, I really like Lorelai Gilmore, the Rory Gilmore character in Gilmore Girls, but like I will say that Alexis Bledel is not amazing. She's just like, you know, that's the character she plays, and I really like that character. But Alexis Bledel is amazing in the one or two episodes that she has in The Handmaid's Tale. And then Samara Wiley, who was last seen as Poussey on Orange is the New Black, plays, you know, Elizabeth Moss's best friend pre-collapse. And they get back together post-collapse, and they have a whole little arc, and it's she's really good too. But she wasn't given as much to do as Elizabeth Moss, and she didn't do anything as volcanic, in my opinion, as Alexis Bledel. So, this is just me arguing with myself. Elizabeth Moss gets deleted, apparently. Elizabeth Moss gets bolded, and Alexis Bledel gets an honor. Like, you would have won a potential guest starring category. Godless, Merritt Weaver, who recognizes Denise from
The Walking Dead,
one of the better characters from the later years.
Yeah.
I've seen the first three episodes of this.
Have you seen...
I like her.
...the scene where she negotiates with the mining company? The women sit down in a room and negotiate.
Yes, if that only happens once, then yes.
That only happens once.
Okay.
Okay, cool. Because I like that scene a lot, especially as it comes to Merritt Weaver's performance, and she has a lot of stuff toward the end that is not really hinted at quite as much as I thought it could have been in the early going.
Mm-hmm.
But she puts in a lot of good performances toward the end of this series, which I don't know that we can really have much of a discussion on that. But what did you think about the mining scene with her? Because I think she has like a a definite presence, like almost in as much as Jeff Daniels has a presence in this show.
I can see what you're saying, and I really like this actor. I really liked her in The Walking Dead. She's something open and appealing about her that I really like. However,
she's playing a very different role.
She is
in this, which shows me kind of her range.
Although, I guess they are definitely
she's much stronger.
Yeah,
she's very
Denise
much stronger.
Denise
comes
around
to a place where but this
character is very strong.
Yeah.
Her accent is so god-awful in the three episodes I've seen. And there's a lot of that.
Yeah.
Like, Sam Watterson plays...
that's a part of her performance.
Sam
right.
Watterson can't decide whether he wants to do Slim Pickens or his prosecutor from Law & Order.
Uh-huh.
Like, and he kind of drifts
or
in and out between...
Or the newsroom, or like any... Yeah.
Yeah, some of the accent work on the show is not great. Mm-hmm. And she's one of the worst offenders.
Even Scoot. Scoot's not got the accent either.
No, yeah. So I I've only seen a third of the available episodes. I haven't gotten all the way through it, so I don't know. I'll let you, I mean, sounds
I know,
like
I
you...
mean, she's doing a lot in that scene. I think there's, because she's not the only voice that has a vote in that scene, it becomes a very tense moment, and I think she portrays that really well. And later on, some of the... I'll say heartbreaking stuff that happens with her toward the end of the series. And it's a mini series. It's like 7 episodes. If you haven't seen it, you should probably go watch it.
Will there be another
especially
season?
If you like Westerns. I don't think so.
Okay.
I can't imagine, but
okay.
Because
that's what I'm saying. Like, I somehow think that's more exciting than otherwise.
Yeah. They call it a limited run series. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I would suggest going to see it, but yeah, I think she would definitely make my top 10 female actors.
Okay. Game of Thrones.
You're going to have to remind me of the Lena Headey scenes.
It's mostly the scene between her and Tyrion in King's Landing when Tyrion is trying to bargain with her after, like, Jon Snow and Dany had bungled negotiations.
Gotcha.
For a fairly stupid part of... I mean, that's the thing is, like, it's hard to get excited about these roles because they were kind of swirling around stupidity.
Yeah.
But she, I mean, that's another thing. It's like, she's done so much great work, and like, is she ever going to do better? Is she ever going to get better than like her walk of shame?
Right.
Or is she ever even better than like her verbal dueling with Robert Baratheon in season one?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because I feel like this show is shifting into big budget blockbuster, and you're just not going to get these quiet. I mean, I don't even know if there's anything as good as she did last year. Wasn't last year the one where she tormented that nun? I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. I guess I was expecting a lot more, like, just her sitting on a black throne of blood, cackling evil. Maybe that's going to be next season. I was expecting to see her, like, in full Ma from Dread.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like a really unhinged portrayal of this. And it's still a fairly conventional Cersei role. And as such, not as much for her to sink her teeth in. I didn't think that, Maisie Williams' Arya was okay.
I mean, Game of Thrones suffers
from
being
Sophie
in
Turner
season 7.
Sophie Turner did better as Sansa, which surprised me. But still, like, outside of one particular scene, which was kind of, depending on who you talk to, hackneyed and horseshit, how they maneuvered them into that position to have it.
Right.
Not super great.
Yeah. No, I think Game of Thrones, all of the actors and actresses from Game of Thrones suffer for having been in that show for 7 years and having done such excellent work for 7 years.
And feeling like, and again, not that the show is no longer excellent. It's still a really great, and there's nothing else like it on television, but I just don't think we're going to get these quiet scenes of intrigue that really let guys like Peter Dinklage and women like Lena Headey shine.
Yeah.
Maybe there'll be some real emotional powerhouses and tearjerkers next season. I'm hoping. We got a year to go before we see it. Let's go move on to Better Call Saul, where there's really only one real choice here, Rhea Seahorn, who plays Jimmy's girlfriend,
Can
Kim.
We, in Game of Thrones, real quick, talk about Emilia Clarke?
Okay,
let's
talk about Emilia
Clarke. I know
Clarke.
You've long not really liked her performance.
It's not
thought
a lot.
She was
I think
an
she's
okay
just,
actress.
She's just fine. She's very good at being powerful, and she's very good at being righteously indignant, but any other emotion... like especially just like sorrow or like a wistfulness, she's not super great at.
And she had one of her biggest moments in this season when she returns to Dragonstone. And I think if I remember correctly, I felt like that left me a little cold. And it may have been the placement of that scene in the season. It may have been the performance. I think it was a combination of both.
Right.
But I don't think that Emilia Clarke has done, you know, as impressive work as like Lena Headey, for instance.
Yeah. And even that scene, even if it left you cold, like imagine if it didn't have, is it Ramin Djawadi, the composer? Like if it didn't have his score backing it up.
Right.
Like, would it have been anything?
I'd like to see The Leftovers without music.
Yeah. I mean, it'd still be,
but
yeah.
What that's like.
I mean, it's, I know that's not really fair. Like, if you take take away the soundtrack from anything, or just don't edit it, you know? Take away any of the tools from the tool set. Turn off the lights. Turn off the lights on the
Turn
set.
Turn off the cameras.
I'd like to see.
Let's just get the audio.
Emilia Clarke emoting into a camera with zero light on the set. You know,
sure.
Just out of focus. I think she's, you know, you get Meryl Streep in there and she's like, you know, she incandesces because that's how good she is. Better Call Saul. We got off track. Rhea Seehorn. She's really good.
Oh, you're bolding it already. Bolded.
Oh yeah.
No discussion. This is one of her finest seasons.
Yeah, like
one where she can really shine.
She's given a lot to do.
Yeah.
And
branching out on her own, you know, getting away from Jimmy, I think, has done her
some good. Watching
her
burn the candle at both ends until, and her doing it and succeeding until she doesn't is pretty great. And then her kind of like turn to couch potatoism, I thought was super entertaining and a nice character moment where she's just like, you know, fuck it. I've done this way, and it's gotten me in this position. So I'm just taking off pants, and I'm watching Netflix, or I'm hitting up Blockbuster.
Yeah,
it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
And her coming, I think, to near the end of her rope with Jimmy, I think, has been a very interesting thing for her to do as an actress. I don't know. I thought it was a great performance.
Yeah, she had to like, because she has this like contempt for Chuck, like. Mm-hmm. Most right-thinking people do.
However.
But she also, like, you know, is on the other side of the fuck Chuck bandwagon where it's like, I don't know if this, how I feel about him getting taken down this many pigs. And then we don't even see what happens at the tail end of all this.
And the fact that he like, Chuck is probably right about some things about Jimmy, and she knows that. And, like, she's doing a really excellent job.
Did we fuck up by leaving Jonathan Banks off the male actors list? I don't think we did.
I don't think so.
I felt like this was an off. Like, Jonathan Banks is great. Mike just didn't have as much to do.
Yeah, and They Broke My Boy or anything like that this season.
Right, right. Like, his best, I want to say his best sequence was shooting the toe of a Chuck Taylor Converse shoe. Like, that's his.
When did that happen? I don't remember.
That's how he marked the truck for the. The border crossing.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Like some of that, like, it's still, but I even found like this. I started to lose patience with the just watching Mike do Mike thing sequences. And that's not Jonathan Banks' fault. It's just.
Right. But it's also not him doing excellent acting either.
Right. You know? Right. They got to, if they're going to do that, they got to get it. It's got to be bigger and more spectacular every single time, you know? So we got Rhea Seehorn as Kim and then Legion. I thought had two pretty powerhouse female performances. A1, Aubrey Plaza as Lenny Busker.
Yeah.
And, I mean, she brought all of her, like, crazy manic energy from, like, all the things you've seen Aubrey Plaza in. Bad Moms and, you know, my shitty Hawaiian date movie. And
neither of those.
Yeah.
You're kind of burying the lead here.
And Parks and Rec. And she added like just a real evil, evil, crazy, unhinged quality.
Yeah.
And was amazing. She played like 10 different roles in this show. And I also really like Rachel Keller as Sid. Rachel Keller also got my attention playing Simone from season 2 of Fargo. I feel much in the same way that I feel about Merritt Weaver there's just something really watchable about her, and I'm excited to see what she does in season two of Legion. And also I keep like keeping an eye on to see like if she's going to break out into a movie or something, because mm-hmm. she's very talented. And also the other thing is like that surprised me, she's crazy young. She's only like 23, 24 years old.
Okay.
So like she could rip off a decade of amazing work and it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think Aubrey Plaza is the obvious one to pull from that, but like, I don't know. I feel like Rachel had to do some complex stuff where she was switching bodies with people, yeah. and you know that's always like portraying someone else through your own instrument of your body is a neat acting challenge, and
yeah,
and there's
and some of the quieter moments that she has with Dan,
mm-hmm.
What's his last name?
Stevens.
Dan Stevens.
Right.
Were really good, too.
Yeah, they took this, like, rogue quality where she's, like, the woman that, you know, you want to approach and get close to, but she can't be touched because that's part of her powers slash curse.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it's real good. So I kind of want to bold both of them.
Okay.
And then see who makes the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
So now...
That's it. There were no more actors on TV this year.
Now that we've got, that's not true.
No, that's true. We got them all.
now, I guess what should we do? Should we try to put these into a top 10 order?
I guess, yeah. We take all the bolded ones and we move them.
Do you want to start, do you continue with the women and just?
Sure.
All right. I'm going to put the role, I guess, or the show, since I think the next step is to make that stuff go away.
Okay.
Lejuan. Yeah, so this is Better Call Saul. Merritt Weaver was from Godless.
Except I can't type.
Elizabeth Moss is from Handmaid's Tale. Handmaid's Tale. Are you doing the dudes?
No, I was doing the females.
Oh, okay. This is from Fargo.
And we got them.
This is from... Wait, do we?
Yep. What?
Wait, what? Oh, okay.
It hadn't refreshed on your end.
Cool. All right, let's get rid of everybody else. So here goes the Great Purge.
Everybody else can go fuck themselves.
The Great Purge. Now we're down to the Grace's Gummern people. Gummern the Gyllenhaals of the world. God damn it, I fucking hate this. What are we going... Okay, so how many did we end up with? Did we end up with exactly 10?
That's maybe.
Convenient. So, should we start at the bottom and like send people to the top? That seems to be a thing to do. But we're gonna be tough because like I feel like
we've got the number one at the top is the problem.
Yeah,
Carrie Coon's not gonna get busted down. I'm sorry, I just don't see
it. Okay, let me ask you this. Is Aubrey Plaza in Legion better than Rhea Seehorn in Better Call Saul?
Oh, shit.
I say yes.
I kind of agree with you.
What do you think about Rachel Keller?
No.
Okay.
Aubrey Plaza has more of a showcase kind of performance
here. I agree. Whereas
it's more to do. It's
right. Okay, now...
It's broader, but it's good.
I feel like all of these women are better than Merritt Weaver and Godless, but I've only seen the first three episodes.
What? I think Merritt Weaver would not go below Sid Barrett, Rachel Keller. I think... I can only see Merritt getting bumped down two spaces currently.
Okay, I might argue that, but I haven't seen the whole show, so how can I?
Right.
I'm going to throw Elizabeth Moss to the top.
Oh, what?
I'm just throwing it to the top in the way that we sometimes
doesn't
do.
Doesn't mean anything, just throw it to the top.
Aubrey Plaza better than Mary Elizabeth Winstead as Nikki Swango?
I don't know about that. That's tough.
See, I would say yes.
Okay. I don't feel too passionately about either of those. I think I could follow you on the Aubrey Plaza thing. Now we're getting into the showstoppers.
Yeah, I think
this top five is strong.
Like, I'm gonna throw Maggie to the top.
Oh, come on. To the top. Elizabeth Moss goes to the top, but Maggie Gyllenhaal is not put to the top.
To the top. This is all
at least
for show.
Temporarily.
All for show. All part of the show, folks.
Grace Gummer to the top.
So does Grace Gummer get above Millie Bobby Brown? I say yes.
Yes.
You have a long career ahead of you, Millie Bobby Brown. And so does Grace Gummer. She's not, like, you know,
she's not 11?
In the winter of her career, but she's not 11. Yeah. Then...
The buck stops at Carrie Coon.
I feel like so Carrie Coon is better than Elizabeth Moss and better than Maggie Gyllenhaal. That's not controversial.
Honestly, I'm happy with that list as is, but I haven't seen Elizabeth Moss in Handmaid's Tale, so in my opinion, it would be Carrie Coon, Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Is a realistic woman portrayal in an actual society that we live in, an America, and just losing her shit about how fucked up it is, a better performance than a woman in a fictionalized, over-the-top, crazy-ass, worst possible case scenario version of a future America that if we fell asleep at the switch for a generation or two, we might get.
You're not going to like my answer because it's non-committal. It's depends on the performance.
I mean, that's
like the setting, I suppose, is more interesting in the Elizabeth Moss in Handmaid's Tale.
To me, I was going for the exact opposite. I'm like,
okay.
Maggie Gyllenhaal, like, they're both like screams into the void, but like Maggie Gyllenhaal is about like it's a more grounded performance.
I mean, to me,
whereas The Handmaid's Tale, but I mean, you know,
Maggie is my number two with a bullet here. Like, if it weren't for Carrie Coon, Maggie wins this.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you would have to watch late into The Handmaid's Tale to see the stuff. Just kind of like, because I think you could say the same thing about Maggie Gyllenhaal. Like, that was pretty late into the run of The Deuce before she ripped off the first of her soliloquies, and then she had another one a little bit after that. Elizabeth Moss, I think it's like the penultimate or maybe the third to last episode where she puts in like she goes Super Saiyan.
Yeah.
So I kind of think that's fair. We're sure that Grace Gummer's better than Millie Bobby Brown. Because I say that because isn't that, wait, or is that the top five?
I think
that
is the top
five. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, I'm fine with that being a top five.
Yeah.
If we were debating on who should make the, like, that would be a stronger debate. But if they're going to be in the top five, I'm cool with that.
You're in the top five. You're not going to win, but.
Right. So we ended up with a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We ended up with the top 10.
Is there at all any remorse in the fact that Carrie Coon is going to win this twice in a row? I don't think that factors in, honestly. I think she put in
the win last
best
year?
Performance 2 years in a row.
Did she win last year?
I don't know. You can look at it.
I can't look at it.
I wonder if it's on our Baldi's article from last year.
Probably not, because it'd be spoilers.
You're right.
Be considered spoilers.
Best male and female actor.
I'm trying to think of, like, Carrie Coon in season two of... I mean, you're probably right.
Yeah, I don't know that I can find this.
Unless
The
Leftovers took a year off. That's the only thing that might have...
No, I mean, we can see if it was on the list, if she was on the list.
That's true. Let's see here. See, who's Justin Theroux? See, I think...
Oh, shit.
I think, yeah, she didn't.
So she won the year before, 2015?
Yeah. I think Evan...
Go back to the 2015.
Evan Rachel Wood. Or Thandie Newton won last year, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. All these 2015. Let's see if that's in any kind of order.
You know what? We also added comedians to both lists, which...
We did?
Yeah, I mean, they're never going to win, so no. I don't think we're wrong for leaving them off.
Oh, shit. Carrie Coon didn't win.
Who won?
So, Baldi's 2015, Justin Theroux got Best Actor. Best Actress in 2015 was Regina King. narrowly scooping the award out from Carrie Coon.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, this was...
I believe you.
This was Carrie Coon's year.
Or I agree with you, rather.
This was the for on the leftovers, like, she finally, like, yeah.
Yeah, season two was not as much about her as it was Kevin. And then the scenes where she was super important, Regina King was also instrumental and destroyed the screen.
Right. So, okay.
Then I'd feel no remorse whatsoever. Carrie Coon.
It's fucking stupid for us to act like you can't. Like, if you're the best that year, you're the best that year. This isn't the fucking NBA MVPs. You know, like, if you're the best, you're the best. I don't care how many years in a row you won. Like, Michael Jordan should have won, like, 7 MVPs. But he didn't for those exact same horseshit arguments. All right.
I'm going to start doing the mail.
Okay, let's do that. Are we putting John Bernthal's Punisher? We're not bolding him?
Bold him. We'll see where he ends up. Might not be in the top 10.
Let's see. Oof. A lot of big names just skipping right over.
Yep.
Oh, we are only taking Jude Law?
Yeah.
Moleface?
Cardinal Moleface doesn't get anything. Sorry, oof. Moleface.
Oof.
This is for Fargo.
I shouldn't have done this. John Bernthal, Punisher. The Punisher. Better Call Saul. This is riveting podcasting if we don't edit it, but you know.
There we go.
This is behind the scenes shit people crave. It's got the behind the scenes shit people crave. Deformatting. You know, I could probably just select all this and tell it to fuck right off with the bullet points and it would do it. Let's see. Ta-da. Cool. All right, so we got Justin's or David Harbour, Noah Schnappi, Badong Wong. God damn it. Why would it do that? Why would it not, I suppose? All right, here we go. Is John Bernthal better than Michael McKean?
No.
Is Michael McKean better than Jeff Daniels from Godless? Really? I got to recuse myself because 3 episodes I'm not sure.
Yeah, man. I wish you had seen the rest of it then because I think Jeff Daniels does excellent work throughout that series. I just feel like Michael McKean has the harder job and executes on a level that I think you just can't take anything away from him.
So you're wanting to put him above Jeff Daniels?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is Michael McKean better than Jude Law?
Ooh, such different performances.
They all have really dramatic chops and like poignancy and sadness and comedy, but I think Jude Law's thing was more fun.
Oh, definitely more fun.
So, like, all else being equal, the one that made me smile and entertain me and didn't make me feel bad about myself as a person in the final analysis, I think it's going to win.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm cool with leaving those in that order for now.
Is Jude Law better than David Thewlis?
No.
I agree.
David Thewlis needs to go up this list.
To the top! Are we to the top?
To the top!
Sorry, Justin.
You're temporarily below someone else.
Gary Carr. Okay, is Jude Law better than Gary Carr as CC? The young pimp.
CC. Yes. I think it's a much more complex performance.
Jude Law's better than CC? Okay, I agree too. Is he better than James Franco? Yes.
Yeah.
Is he better than Bobby Cannavale or BD Wong?
Here's where things get interesting.
I agree. He's. I feel like he's starting to rise to his ceiling.
I would say let's leave him there for now and let's see what Gary Carr does.
Because
I want to say Michael McKean is going above Gary Carr and James Franco as well. He's kind of traveling with Jude Law.
I would take Michael. I would take Jeff Daniels.
Okay.
and put him...
I almost feel like John Bernthal is going to be an honorable mention in this category because the performance is kind of one note, and that's not his fault.
It's a comic book movie.
It's just the material, yeah.
Okay. So... I'm going to put Gary Carr over James Franco. Like, not that it matters, because it's out of the top five, but...
It matters to me, damn it.
Okay.
Now, where are we? Bobby Cannavale?
Yeah. He's not better than...
And BD Wong to the top with both of them.
Both of them to the top?
To the top.
To the fucking top. He's gone crazy.
I know.
Because we're about ready to hit into the... Okay, so, like, Noah Schnapp. I don't think he's better, like... him and David Harbour. Oh,
I don't
God.
Think I don't think the work that either of them do is better than the work that the Mr. Robot actors did. I honestly feel like they belong where they are.
Agreed. I'm actually wondering whether Jude Law should go above either of them. I kind of think he does.
And maybe Michael McKean.
No.
And maybe Jeff Daniels. I don't know. I really like Michael McKean as Chuck.
All right. I like that. So you're saying that Michael McKean goes over David Harbour and Noah Schnapp.
Yeah, I think it's a harder thing to pull off, and he pulled it off.
Man, now I'm starting to feel like I'm going back to fuck Chuck.
I just think that's a really complex character, and the way he portrays it is really skilled.
What's Will Byers, a bowl of tapioca?
No, but it's a lot more like swinging into. He has like two gears where Michael McKean has like 10. Michael McKean's the semi driver, and Noah Schnapp is the guy driving a 5-speed bike. But I don't know.
They didn't give Michael McKean very many grace notes this season. Like, he's, like, I mean, he's kind of one note in his way. Like, he just goes between retreating to grandiosity to then receding into shame, and he just keeps flipping back between those two extremes. Like, I'm not seeing the...
I think it's the subtlety.
Multifaceted part of the performance that you're seeing.
Yeah, but, I mean, neither is Will Byers. He goes from being bedridden and passed out to screaming his lungs out. Like, that's really the only performance there, you know?
Fair.
And the occasional scene where he gets to be a kid.
I mean, Jim Hopper got to do more than just beat people up this season.
For sure, yeah. Cool. I think this is where David Harbour and Noah Schnapp part ways.
Okay,
and Noah goes
you're
a little
right.
further down the list. And
I mean, that's the thing. Once Noah starts falling, like, is he really better than CeCe? Like, to me, that's around the level. Like, here's what I'd do. I don't know why I'm shitting on James Franco.
Yeah. I don't know. Noah Schnapp is good, but is he doing the same kind of subtle work?
Are we discounting the work they're doing because they're genre roles?
No, I think it's about nuance, and it's about complexity in my mind. And the more complex a role, the harder it is to pull off. And I don't think Will Byers is a very complex role. I think Will Byers is a kid who's tortured by a demon.
We all the time bitch about how terrible child roles are, child performances are.
It must
be a hard thing to do to believably play. So why are we now saying that it's meh?
Because the level of complexity is not nearly as high as an adult role.
Why is it less complex than Millie Bobby Brown is doing?
Because she's conflicted about emotions and how she feels about the situation and herself. Will Byers is screaming because a demon is attacking his butthole. Like,
yeah, but that's like late season. Like, there was some stuff earlier on where it was a lot more of like a tug and pull and a seduction than a just like, I'm shoving my smoke tentacles down your throat. Like, where... You know, he did, like, Haunted Child, which I think is, you know, that's rarefied air. Like, to do that and not be annoying, it's like Haley Joel Osment.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, just it's like that's just the that's a hard thing to do right. But I don't see. I don't also see these guys getting into the top five. So,
right.
And also, is Jim Harbor better than Michael McKean? Is he just more likable?
Sure.
And is Jude Law not going to make the top five? Or wait, yeah, Jude Law is at the top five.
Yeah, I mean, for Michael McKean to ever, you know, even score on these charts, I've always had to really separate him from the character. Separate the job that the actor is doing from the character he's playing, because Michael McKean is doing such a good job of playing a shitbag.
Well, let me ask you this. Where are we at with the top five? Because right now we got BD Wong, Bobby Cannavale, David Thewlis, Justin Theroux, Jude Law. I'm not talking about the order. I'm talking about, do we like that as a top five?
I mean, yeah, that feels like a pretty good grouping. I feel kind of bad that Gary Carr does a great job as CC.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And that is not, like, a super easy role to play. Like, being convincingly portraying someone who could have, this stable of prostitutes who he both charms and terrifies.
Yeah, and he also does this thing because I rewatched a couple of the early show episodes. He has this thing where he's, like, you can tell he's out of his depth, like, intellectually or emotionally or whatever, mm-hmm. but he, like, has this, like, facade of bravado. I think he's having a conversation with Reggie Love about, like, Nixon's pimping in Vietnam, and you can tell that, like, he doesn't follow current events the way Reggie Love does, but he's, like, you know, at the end, he, like, kind of covers up with this, like, well, all right, shit, and I don't know, like, I think that's kind of cool when you can see people played like flawed characters like that, like a very smart person playing a person that may be a notch below a intelligence.
Yeah, like he's still got a
Chris Partlow, like he's the other like simpleton minded pimp that's like really scary too. Like he's Darlene's pimp. And I know that character is fucking smart, or the actor is very smart, and he's got a lot of layers to him. And he played a very smart, like, you know, character on The Wire, and he's playing like kind of like a dangerous, uneducated dumbass in this one. And that's challenging. That's challenging. That's also kind of brave to kind of like, you know. that's just like, this feels like I'm starting to make Tropic Thunder jokes. You know, when you're trying to play within limitations like that without making it seem like a comedy thing, okay. Like you're not Simple Jack. You don't want a Simple Jack. You don't want a Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to say there. But yeah, I agree. He's doing some complex stuff. But the thing is, Jeff Daniels, super shocking that he's even got that gear that he can go to. Never even see him in a villain, let alone like a believable chilling villain. Michael McKean, you know, maybe David Harbour is too high. Maybe I'm only doing that because I like the character Jim Hopper so much.
I think so. I mean, he's got, of all the characters, him and Eleven have, I think,
let me tell you this,
some of the most complex stuff to do.
If David Harbour played the FBI agent, next door neighbor, and the Americans, I might still be watching that show.
All right.
If they got rid of the bowl of tapioca pudding and put him in, I might still be watching that show. That's how much Stan I fucking Beeman. Like David Harbour.
Yeah.
He's a rich man's version of whoever the CDC doctor from The Walking Dead is.
Shit, but I mean, it's not like he's got nothing to do in that show. It's not like he does it poorly.
Let's stop fucking around. We've got a top five that I'm happy with.
Okay.
And is Jude Law better than Justin Theroux? Fuck no. Is Justin Theroux better than David Thewlis? Fuck yes. He's better than Bobby Cannavale. He's better than BD Wong.
Okay.
I
think we all knew what was going to happen here.
Now
this is the tough part.
I think David Thewlis is better.
I think David Thewlis is a number two.
It starts
two.
To become an argument with BD Wong, because BD Wong is also a villain, a very interesting, non-conventional villain. But
I never felt like
I never had
in
to look
bones.
Away from the camera because of shit that he was doing. Whereas David Thewlis made me, you know, made me look away.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like that top five. I kind of like this. I think I like this list, period. Justin Theroux as Kevin Garvey, David Thewlis as VM Varga, BD Wong as White Rose / Zhang, Bobby Cannavale as Irving, and Jude Law as the Young Pope.
I think I could be talked into swapping Jude Law and Bobby Cannavale, but
You know what? I think that's sometimes they get joined at the hip, these people in the same show. Yeah, okay, I like that.
But I'm trying to figure out how much of that is just wanting to separate the two actors from a single show, and how much of that is like feeling like Jude Law actually deserves it. I think he does. Yeah, I think I'm happy with that list.
Okay, then I think we're ready to make some surveys and send them out to our fans to see what they have to say.
Should we do this? Should we go?
Excited. I'm excited to see what happens there.
How do I do this? Boom.
Holy
shit.
Just
to let you know.
Boom. We had a top 12.
Oh, we. What about this? The female actors. We got a bulleted list. What the fuck is that bullshit? And then we can delete John Bernthal and James Franco entirely.
We could.
Because they didn't make the top 10.
We could.
Nah, they were in the running, so.
I mean, that might be something we put into the meta category, right? Like, if we want to talk, or notable exceptions, if we want to put in the Punisher as, like, a show we want to talk about, and just then, because...
Yeah, we already did that one, though.
Did we?
Yeah, we've done everything now.
Oh, that's right. I was thinking maybe we could shoehorn it back in and just talk about it on a reward show. All right, let's leave it as that, and we'll do some fine-tuning later. All right, there you go. I think that's the last of deliberations.
Okay.
See ya.
Up. Oh, fuck. Okay, good.
All right, I gotta take off.
And stop.